I sat very still, listening to the soft sounds of the early morning, my eyes on the field. There was something which I still didn't understand. Stacy nodded toward the road. Here comes Papa and Mr. Morrison. They were walking with slow, exhausted steps toward the drive. The two of us ran down the lawn, but before we reached the road, a car approached and stopped directly behind them. Mr. Jameson was driving. Stacy and I stood curiously on the lawn, far enough away not to be noticed, but close enough to hear. "David, I thought you should know," said Mr. Jameson. "I just come from Strawberry to see the Averys." "How bad is it?" Mr. Jameson stared straight out at the road. "Jim Lee Barnett. He died at 4 o'clock this morning." Papa hit the roof of the car hard with his clenched fist and turned toward the field, his head bowed. For a long, long minute, none of the men spoke. Then Mr. Morrison said softly, "That boy, how is he?"
"Doc Crandon says he's got a couple of broken ribs and his jaw's broken, but he'll be all right for now. I'm going to his folks to tell them and take them to town. Just thought I'd tell you first."
Papa said, "I'll go in with them." Mr. Jameson pulled off his hat and ran his fingers through his hair, damp against his forehead. Then, squinting, he looked over his shoulder at the field. "Folks thinking," he said slowly, as if he didn't want to say what he was about to say. "Folks thinking that lightning struck that fence of yours and started the fire." He pulled at his ear.
"It's better, I think, that you stay clear of this whole thing now, David, and don't give anybody cause to think about you at all, except that you got what was coming to you by losing a quarter of your cotton."
There was a cautious silence as he gazed up at Papa and Mr. Morrison, their faces set in grim, tired lines.
"Or somebody might just get to wondering about that fire."
"Stacy," I whispered, "what's he talking about?"
"Hush, Cassie," Stacy said, his eyes intent on the men.
"But I want to know."
Stacy looked around at me sharply, his face drawn, his eyes anxious. And without even a murmur from him, I suddenly did know. I knew why Mr. Morrison had come for him alone, why Mr. Jameson was afraid for Papa to go into town. Papa had found a way, as Mama had asked, to make Mr. Granger stop the hanging. He had started the fire. And it came to me that this was one of those known and unknown things, something never to be spoken, not even to each other. I glanced at Stacy, and he saw in my eyes that I knew and understood the meaning of what I knew, and he said simply, "Mr. Jameson's going now." Mr. Jameson turned around in the driveway and headed back toward the Averys. Papa and Mr. Morrison watched him leave. Then Mr. Morrison walked silently up the drive to do the morning chores, and Papa, noticing us for the first time, stared down at us, his eyes bloodshot and unsmiling.
"I thought y'all would have been in bed by now," he said.
"Papa," Stacy whispered hoarsely, "what's going to happen to TJ now?" Papa looked out at the climbing sun, a round red shadow behind the smoggish heat. He didn't answer immediately, and it seemed as if he were debating whether or not he should. Finally, very slowly, he looked down, first at me, then at Stacy. He said quietly, "He's in jail right now."
And what then?" asked Stacy.
Papa studied us.
"He could possibly go on the chain gang."
"Papa, could he die?" asked Stacy, hardly breathing.
"Son,
Papa, could he?" Papa put a strong hand on each of us and watched us closely.
"I ain't never lied to y'all. Y'all know that."
"Yes, sir." He waited, his eyes on us.
"Well, I wish I could lie to y'all now."
"No. Oh, Papa, no," I cried. "They wouldn't do that to old TJ. He can talk his way out just about anything. Besides, he ain't done nothing that bad. It was them Simses. Tell them that."
Stacy, shaking his head, backed away, silent, not wanting to believe, but believing still. His eyes filled with heavy tears. Then he turned and fled down the lawn and across the road into the shelter of the forest. Papa stared after him, holding me tightly to him.
Oh, Papa, does it have to be?
Papa tilted my chin and gazed softly down at me. All I can say, Cassie girl, is that it shouldn't be. Then glancing back toward the forest, he took my hand and led me to the house. Mama was waiting for us as we climbed the steps, her face wan and strained. Little Man and Christopher John were already in bed, and after Mama had felt my forehead and asked if I was all right, she sent me to bed too. Big Ma had already gone to the Avery's, and I climbed into bed alone. A few minutes later, both Mama and Papa came to tuck me in, talking softly in fragile, gentle words that seemed about to break. Their presence softened the hurt, and I didn't cry. But after they had left, and I saw Papa through the open window disappear into the forest after Stacy, the tears began to run fast and heavy down my cheeks. In the afternoon, when I awakened, or tomorrow, or the next day, the boys and I would still be free to run the red road, to wander through the old forest, and sprawl lazily on the banks of the pond. Come October, we would trudge to school as always, barefooted and grumbling, fighting the dust and the mud in the Jefferson Davis school bus. But TJ never would again. I had never liked TJ, but he had always been there, a part of me, a part of my life, just like the mud and the rain. And I had thought that he always would be. Yet the mud and the rain and the dust would all pass. I knew and understood that. What had happened to TJ in the night, I didn't understand, but I knew that it would not pass. And I cried for those things which had happened in the night and would not pass. I cried for TJ and the land.